support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC comes from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier. Tonight's Alaska Live is with Midsummer Night's Dream performers and director Tom Robnault from Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, Alan Hayton, translator and plays Oberon, and Kate Woodkey. You are playing, Hermia. And Sarah Mitchell plays Helena in the Midsummer Night's Dream that will be performed in schools and here at a public performance in Fairbanks. Tom, it is great to have you back here at the KUAC studios.
Thank
with
you.
A cast of characters from your new upcoming Gwich'in Translated Midsummer Night's Dream.
That's right.
It's great. And Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater has partnered with KUAC to do these events around Shakespeare Uncovered, and its season two premieres this weekend at an early screening. Everybody's invited to our Saturday event at 4 o'clock, Davis Concert Hall. It's Shakespeare Uncovered, and they're doing Midsummer Night's Dream. And you guys will be there, too, for a panel discussion and some stuff from your production.
That's right. Yeah, we'll be there to do some scenes and to do some songs and a little bit of Gwich'in and to answer some questions and talk about what we're doing with this particular performance of Midsummer Night's Dream and our take on it.
Great. And the Shakespeare Uncovered Midsummer Night's Dream features Hugh Bonneville, who many people would know as Lord Grantham from Downton Abbey.
Right.
I guess he got his start with the Midsummer Night's Dream.
That's right. Yeah. I think he was an understudy for Lysander. And then when they went on tour with the show, he played the role on tour.
That's great. Your production this winter is really very unique because you have Alan Hayton, who's here with us. You've done some translating of the play into Gwich'in.
Yeah, that's right. This is our second production together, working with Tom and Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, and it's a great company. 2 years ago, we did Lir Hechwe, which featured this familiar tragedy set in Alaska with Lir as the patriarch, the Athabascan patriarch in this case, and we translated that, Marilyn Savage and myself, along with Lillian Garnett and other consultants. Pete Peter was in the production as the fool. And now we wanted to take a step in a more comedic direction after that heavy tragedy. Yeah, so now we're
did you do that one in winter also, the King Lear version?
Yeah, it was about this time of year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And now we're in the midst of getting this on its feet, Midsummer Night's Dream. So in this production, Oberon, Titania, Bottom, as well as Puck and some of the fairies will also be speaking native languages. Some Gwich'in, and we hope also Yupik and Tlingit. We wanted to do all 20 Alaska Native languages to honor and celebrate.
Asking a lot of your actors.
To honor that in November, the governor signed a bill, act, you know, acknowledging Alaska Native languages, all 20 of them as official languages of Alaska.
Wow.
And so that's really, we want to celebrate that. And I think that's, you know, part of the idea of this production. And also within the play itself, when the characters enter into the forest, it's like they enter into another world. And so it makes sense that they would have their own language within that world. And that it's kind of the idea behind it.
And so how did Shakespeare give them their own language, like the fairies and that?
Well, they definitely operate under their own rules.
Yeah.
And they can, you know, cast spells, make magic happen, make people fall in love with each other, give someone a donkey's head.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, there's its own logic and rules that they are in the forest there. And then Titania and Oberon are in the midst of this squabble. And because of that, there's upheavals in nature. And, you know, that shows from their disputes going on that it affects the natural world.
This sounds so new. I mean, this sounds just like today. I mean,
yeah.
What humans are doing and our disputes and what's happening is actually affecting nature. I mean, this isn't Shakespearean, but...
Yeah, I think we might allude to that in this production.
Oh,
right.
Interesting.
We have some visuals to accompany the language. And, you know, there's this winter especially has been unusual. We've only recently had this below zero weather.
Right.
And I don't know. There's just a lot of changes happening in the environment. But that's not really what the entire play is about, but you'll see some of that perhaps.
Oh, cool. Tom, it's nice to have you back. Have you been here this whole winter?
I have not. I've been. I currently work with Perseverance Theater down in Juneau. So they've been gracious enough to let me come up here for a month and direct the play. So during the day, I work remotely for them. And then at night, I direct the show in downtown. Yeah.
Oh, the beauty of 2015.
Right. No kidding. Yeah.
That's wonderful that you're coming back to Fairbanks, the first place you came to in Alaska, right?
Or was right. Yeah. I started with Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater back in 2000. And Jake Wade I became friends with Jake Wade then. And we did a production of The Merchant of Venice. And that was my first Shakespeare, basically out of college, I think, was here at Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater. And I've been coming here ever since 2000, off and on. The last 4 or 5 years I lived here before the previous year where I moved to Juneau. I directed a lot of productions and acted in productions here. And then 2 years ago is where we started this kind of new birth of doing Alaska Native language with Shakespeare, with King Lear. And that's something that I always knew Alan had been talking about, ways to get language out into different avenues, using different avenues to get language out. And in my mind, I thought, well, why not this? And Juneau, interestingly enough, that Perseverance Theater, I can't remember the year they did it, but they did a Clinkett Macbeth. And that was part of the idea where I got the idea from. Anita Maynard Losh was a director for that. And Alan was actually in that production, and same with Jake. They were both in that production. This is our kind of take on continuing that kind of theme and continuing that kind of art.
I was going to say, it's not always, we don't always have a chance to hear native languages.
Right.
And through the arts is a great way, through stage productions, music. It's a great way to have that, you know, kind of absorb that.
Yeah.
And
it fits real. It feels great with Midsummer Night's Dream. And it went really well with Lear, but with a Midsummer Night's Dream, it seems like there's a little bit more cut and dry where you can put the language in. And with Titania and Oberon and Puck, it made sense that those characters would speak the language, especially with there's three different worlds basically in A Midsummer Night's Dream. There's the court that involved the lovers and the Duke and the Duchess, Theseus and Hippolyta. And then there's the fairy world, which that's the part where we're translating that kind of into an Alaska Native feel. And then you've got the mechanicals, who are the kind of city dwellers that are craftsmen that are putting on this play for the Duke and the Duchess at the end of the play on the solstice. So for our production, we're kind of adding this element that it's set again in Alaska, just like we did with King Lear, and that we have this summer solstice show that's happening. So it's a bit different with the full light and things of that nature. So that was a way to fit it in. And what's interesting about this play is that these worlds, all three of these worlds, collide with each other or flow into each other, if you want to think of it that way. And one thing that we had both found that will really work with this play is that the character of Bottom, who disrupts Titania in her sleep, she wakes up after getting the love juice in her eyes. She wakes up, sees Bottom, who has been transformed into a half donkey, half man, in Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, but ours is going to be a half moose, half...
Of course.
Right.
Yes.
And so, but what happens to Bottom when he see when he's sucked into this dream with the fairies is that he starts to speak Gwich'in. He slowly starts to speak Gwich'in. So that character, is, as he transforms and has actual contact into that world, starts to change as well. And then there's
so it makes sense in the
play. It does. And Lear did too. But this has been, this is kind of a little bit easier where we found it. Lear was a really, we did a lot of brainstorming on that, a lot of work to make that happen.
Yeah, the difference in between reality and dream and fantasy is kind of malleable in this play.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the artistic license or freedom to play with it and have fun and just celebrate this time together on stage.
And I know that you're just starting to work on this play. Like you said, Tom, you just got here this week. And Alan, you have finished the translations and now you're starting to teach the other actors these translations. But I know that you're ready to, you know, share a little bit with our audience tonight here on Alaska Live and Saturday during the public event that starts at 4 o'clock at Davis this Saturday. And so do we want to jump into some of that?
Sure. I think that Alan's probably got some good stuff to share.
Sure. A little bit about the translation process. You know, Shakespeare, his language is very poetic and layered in meaning, and there's different aspects of it that you might translate, and you have to kind of unlock the language in order to understand, okay, what is it he's saying, and then make a choice about what you're translating, put it into plain English, basically, and then working with Marilyn Savage and I, we would think about it and play around with different possibilities of translation, because you can say similar things in Gwich'in in different ways. And so I'm glad that Marilyn was game for this process, because it just kind of requires it. When I first approached her in 2012, I guess is when we started translating Lear, she was like, oh, this is impossible. This is never going to happen, never going to work. And but then once we got going and got into it and just enjoyed the challenge, it was quite fun. And now we have the actors arriving and beginning to tackle the language as actors, having to master the different sounds, because there's sounds in Gwich'in that aren't in English, and also understanding what they're saying. In some ways, it's like that with Shakespeare as well. When you tackle a role, you have to decode what's being said and understand what you're saying as an actor and to get it across.
Because a lot of us have experienced either going to a Shakespeare play or reading one in school or at Bardathon or whatever, and that English is not the same English as we use in our everyday lives, but yet it makes sense.
Yeah, it's modern English, but it's not, say, like Chaucer, but it's not old English, but it is changed since Shakespeare's time.
Yes.
I could read maybe a little speech of Oberon's so the audience can hear some of the Gwich'in, and this is when he is calling Puck, my gentle Puck, come hither. Thou rememberest once I sat upon a promontory and heard a mermaid on a dolphin's back uttering such dulcet and harmonious breath, etc. And he's talking about this flower that he wants Puck to retrieve that he's going to use to make the love potion.
Is there a word in Gwich'in that means dolphin?
Well, that part, we didn't translate.
Gotcha.
This is an edited script, so that part was edited down. So we just get the essence of it. So he's, I'll just read the end of it, actually. I clot an vichush ikle titania the cheek wujig veneto cut nihicha. Hiku ikle jutrokit nah in ayet ehenya. Dinji nah inji. Jitti ningare. Jizur sho. jo mochi la fo I troch hit na in in jit heda and sa it henya. Ne shahihla gu kih I jizikwan jiha hanjat ihla I drin and shat shitat salhatsa.
Wow, if you're just tuning in, we have Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater folks here from their upcoming production of Midsummer Night's Dream. And part of it is translated in Gwich'in, including that. And it seems like it's going into this dream world that way. Dreams don't always make sense. And they, you know, that was very lyrical, though. How are you teaching these others to speak these?
I have the written lines so that they can look at that. And I've been encouraging the, Delinda, she's Meskwaki from Iowa, and her language is different than ours. And it's a challenge for her. So I've been having her, I've recorded, you know, a take on the lines so she could hear the pronunciation. And then she's also got the script to look at. And then I had her write out her lines, you know, again, so that it's multimodal. She's kinesthetically writing, and then she's auditorially hearing it and visually seeing it on the page. And so it just reinforces that learning process. And she's doing a great job. She only started just over almost a week ago, and she's already, you know, with great energy and enthusiasm tackling this challenge. So I'm very proud of her. I'm proud of all these actors for
having a go at it. Where did you grow up, Alan?
I grew up in Arctic Village, which is north of here. And my family is also from Fort Yukon. And when I was growing up there in the 70s, and there were many elders and even children who spoke Gwich'in as their first language.
Wow.
And so when I arrived there at 4 years old, I was just immersed in the language. And you hear it all day long in different contexts, and going to the post office, going to the church, all the entire church services in our language. And the reading and writing was also taught in the school. And so I was able to learn it that way, just being immersed in it.
Yeah.
And, but it is an endangered language. You know, there's fewer speakers. We're losing our elders, and young people now aren't learning it as their first language. So we are concerned about the future of this language, and others here in Alaska, you know, the young people aren't necessarily speaking these languages as their first language. So
all the more reason to get it out there with a play too, you know, and I know that this play is going to schools. That's what part of Midsummer Night's Dream, you've taken it and condensed it into something that can be performed at schools, and it's just amazing.
It'll run about an hour and 20 minutes, and that's perfect for schools. You don't want to show up with a three-hour production in a gymnasium.
Unless you want to lose them all.
So, it's about an hour and 20 minutes, and it is cut down, and we got the grant from the National Endowment of the Arts from the Shakespeare and American Communities grant. That the same grant that we received for King Lear, and it's just they love the idea. Matter of fact, King Lear was a spotlight of theirs. Out of 40 companies, we were one of six that were featured on their website all year as a model example. And actually, this year when they sent the press release out, we were the model out of the 40 of what to do with a grant like this.
I think there were only 10 to 12 different stations that received these Shakespeare Uncovered grants from the National Endowment for the Humanities that we got to partner with you guys for this. And so very grant-driven.
Two forces coming together. Yeah,
so good. And that has made it possible for us to put on all these events surrounding Shakespeare Uncovered, including the one on Saturday that you guys will be back for. That's at Davis Concert Hall. Everyone's invited. It's at 4:00, and we do an early screening of the Shakespeare Uncovered, and then you guys will do some scenes and talk about your production again. So this is kind of a taste of what that'll be on Saturday. And you'll do some public shows of Midsummer Night's Dream also, not just the school shows. Sarah, why don't you speak to that? Sarah Mitchell is the tour manager for Shakespeare for this production in schools.
It's So yes, we're excited. We are starting off with a road trip leg that goes down through Tok and Glen Allen, but then we'll work our way back up to Fairbanks, and we'll be here in Fairbanks at Pioneer Park, the Centennial Center for the Arts. And we'll have shows for schools March 4th, 5th, and 6th at 11:30 a.m., which works well for the high school lunch break. And then in the evenings, Friday, Saturday, the 6th and 7th, we'll do a 7:30 show and then a 2 p.m. matinee on Sunday.
Cool. And that's here in Fairbanks,
right here
for
in Fairbanks.
The public.
Then the end of the tour is going to be really fun. We're going to wrap up by flying up to Fort Yukon, and then, which is great because we get to perform the show for people that understand Gwich'in.
Amazing.
And finally, we're going to end in Barrow as our grand finale.
Wow. It's really important that, you know, this gets out to places like Fort Yukon, because then it really is celebrating the language of, you know, your elders, Alan, and showing kids that, you know, this still can be part of your life. And that's neat.
Yeah, when we took Lear Hekwe up to Arctic Village, and that was one of the most nerve-wracking experiences for me, because many of the elders I grew up with were sitting in the audience, and I wasn't sure how they would receive it. And I was very glad and humbled that at the end they really enjoyed what they saw and heard on the stage, and it was just a gratifying experience. And we took it to Fort Yukon as well, and there were more speakers there. And here in Fairbanks, one of the audience members that came said, "That was the first time I've seen a play, and it was in my language." And they were just blown away. And so we're just happy to be able to do this and to give the language and Shakespeare also new audiences, and just share it out there with this, our communities here in Alaska.
I think that the Shakespeare Uncovered, that series, does a really good job of giving the history and kind of how the adaptations go, just like we're talking here about how this was adapted to, you know, Alaska and to village and city life and all this. That series goes behind all these different Shakespeare productions, including A Midsummer Night's Dream. That kicks off the season two. And King Lear is the same night, February 5th, we've got back-to-back A Midsummer Night's Dream and King Lear on Shakespeare Uncovered on KUAC TV. So it all comes to full circle there. Taming of the Shrew and Othello and Antony and Cleopatra and Romeo and Juliet are also in this season two. A really wonderful series about, really helps to wrap your head around what was going on in Shakespeare's time and then how it just all can come full circle to this time too.
Yeah, and he'll continue to do that because the themes that he wrote about are, they're always here. They'll always be here. It's timeless, yeah. And I think there's a quote that was on the Shakespeare Uncovered. It said, the guy was saying, as we speak about Midsummer right now, there is probably about 100 productions being worked on at this moment. And we're watching it, we're going, well, yeah, we're one of them. We're one of the 100 productions being worked on. He's right. There's especially with A Midsummer Night's Dream, it's so done that it's you know, everybody knows A Midsummer Night's Dream. It's
everywhere. A lot of people do it in winter?
I don't know. I think it's a good idea.
I do too.
Because, I mean, it's 40 below outside. If you're going to be at your house, you might as well go see a comedy, right?
That has to do with the summer solstice in it, too. That sounds beautiful.
It's a great idea. I was meeting with Alan and Juno, actually, and one of his friends had said, you know what would be interesting is that the Midnight Sun. And I was like, yeah, okay. And Alan was like, yeah, it's just – but it's a great idea. And it's – you know, summer solstice meant so much more for Elizabethan culture than that does now. But for Alaska, it means so much.
Yeah.
And to have that – theme throughout the play, they continuously talk about this day, this evening, the summer solstice, and that's what happens in Alaska, we talk about this all the time. You know, we talk about the time of how much sunlight we've got today.
Every day.
Yeah, exactly. And so we're getting 8 minutes back now. And, but this celebration of summer. And it was a big thing back in Shakespeare's time, and it's a big thing for Alaska. So those two themes are very, or that one theme is very important for two different cultures that are kind of coming together. And it's interesting to think about the two different cultures as, you know, in A Midsummer Night's Dream, you have the Athenian culture and you have Elizabethan culture kind of colliding to make this play. Here we have Alaskan culture combining with A Midsummer Night's Dream to make this play. So it's just continuously timeless. He put so many themes. It's so layered that you can find any avenue to make an idea and to run with it.
You know, in that time, there were no electric lights. So I can really mm-hmm. see where your life would revolve around the sun coming up, the sun going down.
Mm-hmm.
And once the sun has gone down, well, then you've got to go to bed soon because really, you know, there's not a lot to do after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the longest day of the year just has such significance.
Yeah. And there was a lot of festivals, a lot of games, a lot of the maypole and all that was happening from May 1st with the Rites of May, and it went through, and then it was summer solstice, and that's where this play takes place. It takes place from, it's past the May games, but it goes on and it's 4 days before the solstice. And so they talk about, you know, I think it was Lysander talks about where Hermia and Helena, and he had just previously a month ago or so had been observing the Rites of May from a hillside. And then, you know, then now they're here and within 4 days, the summer solstice will happen. And that's when Duke Theseus and Hippolyta get married is on that day. So everything's pushing towards the summer solstice. Yeah.
Well, we have Hermia and Helena right mm-hmm. here at the KUAC Alaska Live Studios. And, Kat even brought her guitar along, which, true to Alaska Live, we love it when people can perform not just from what's going to be in the production, but a performance of. Kat, you want to explain what you've got here for us?
I did bring the guitar for a song maybe a little bit later, but I think to start, Sarah and I were going to read part of a scene from early on in Midsummer when you're introduced to the lovers, Hermia and Helena, who have been sweet playfellows since they were very young, and by the end of the show wind up in a little bit of a rift.
And Tom was actually talking about this first scene of the play. It starts out pretty dark. There's some confusion about who's going to marry Hermia, and we haven't met Helena yet. Hermia wants to marry Lysander, but her dad wants her to marry Demetrius.
This is a common theme in Shakespeare.
Yeah, sounds
like,
familiar.
Dad says you're going to marry this one, and you want to marry that one. Yeah.
And then Tom was saying that the comedy kind of comes in when Helena comes running on because she's all disheveled and in love with Demetrius, but he wants nothing to do with her. And there's kind of this, Lysander introduces Helena by saying like, oh, look, here she comes. And you get the idea that Helena is always sort of like interrupting these two lovers, Lysander.
The third wheel back in Shakespeare's
ever the
day.
Third wheel.
All right. Sarah, you can actually grab Alan's mic for just a bit so you can read your lines into your own microphone.
I was thinking when Alan read that lovely speech, that's actually a cue line for me, which is so I'm actually trying to learn it because I get lost in the lyrical thing. And the other day in rehearsal, I was trying to figure out when to enter. So anyway, starting to get it.
We're working things out right here.
That's a new challenge, is having actors who are hearing Gwich'in and trying to come in at the right time. That's great.
Oh, the challenges.
Right. Tom, do you want to say, "Here comes Helena"?
Okay. Here comes Helena.
Godspeed, fair Helena. Whither away?
Call you me fair? That fair again unsay. Demetrius loves your fair. Oh, happy fair. Your eyes are lodestars, and your tongue's sweet air more tunable than lark to shepherd's ear when wheat is green and when hawthorn buds appear. Sickness is catching. Oh, were favor so. Yours would I catch, fair Hermia, ere I go. My ear should catch your voice, my eye your eye. My tongue should catch your tongue's sweet melody. Were the world mine, Demetrius being baited, the rest I'd give to be to you translated. Oh, teach me how you look, and with what art you sway the motion of Demetrius's heart.
I frown upon him, yet he loves me still.
Oh, that your frowns would teach my smiles such skill.
I give him curses, yet he gives me love.
Oh, that my prayers could such affection move.
The more I hate, the more he follows me.
The more I love, the more he hateth me.
His folly, Helena, is no fault of mine.
None but your beauty. Would that fault were mine.
Well, it's great to have this practice here. You've hit the lines.
And it's funny, we start out, you know, we're pretty buddy-buddy there, but later in the forest, it gets a little ugly.
Later in
ugly.
The forest, they're calling each other names. And they're,
well, you can tell there's a definite rift happening.
Absolutely.
Because,
there's a little jealousy going on there.
Some issues.
And there's actually a wonderful segment in the Shakespeare Uncovered Midsummer Night's Dream episode about Shakespeare's women and that they'll walk through fire to get what they want. And
yeah,
I think
right.
Both of these women show those true colors by the end of the show, that they're not going to be pushed around. So,
yeah, and that's interesting because, you know, Hermia does stand up to, actually speaks in front of Duke Theseus without being spoken to first. She just comes out, and that's a clue that of the strength of the character and the urgency of that moment. That was, you didn't do that. But that's a clue that Shakespeare is he's kind of going against those laws and those ideas and writing in a way that shows you the strength of the women and that they're going for what they want and showing women, portraying women in a strong way.
What are the movies these days? You rank them if there's more than one line for women and they're not just talking about a man that they're in love with, and so you get to rank the movie. Shakespeare plays have some wonderfully developed female characters and never a lack of that in a Shakespeare play, I think.
Yeah.
And in Midsummer Night's Dream, it sounds like you two are going to play some very fun roles.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. Like the two lovers are like that. They're very strong female characters, but Hippolyta is as well, and so is Titania. They all are, you know. And it's great. It's a great way to celebrate that. Yeah.
And is this the case when back in the 1500s, when Shakespeare was actually putting on plays, they were all played by men, though?
They were.
But that doesn't mean that he didn't write those female roles strong
right.
and whatever. It
right.
just happened to be that in that day, it was all men on stage.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes men playing women dressing up as men.
Right.
Which would have been very interesting to see.
Right. Because a big Shakespeare theme is trickery and disguise and, yeah. And so men playing women dressing up as men.
Much yeah. like it could have been as You Like It we did this last summer.
That's true. You know, Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, you don't just do one event a year. You have events throughout the year. You've got Midsummer Night's Dream coming up. You have Bardathon coming up.
Bardathon, right.
And Bardathon is?
It's going to be February 14th Thank to
you.
21st.
Cool.
And we're excited to be back at our former space, what used to be the Empress Theater, but it is now the Fairbanks Community Museum downtown.
Very cool. Downtown Fairbanks. Upstairs. And we plan on dropping in and taking some audio during afternoon
Great.
Concert during the weekdays. So I know that you just posted the Bardathon schedule at fstalaska.org. And it looks like A Midsummer Night's Dream kicks off the first weekday at noon. Mm-hmm. So we'll be able to actually drop in on that because you stream it live on the web.
That's right. Yeah.
And this is all part of the events surrounding Shakespeare Uncovered and how KUAC and Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater have been able to partner for so many events surrounding Midsummer Night's Dream and the season two event we're doing on Saturday, which is super exciting. Here at the Davis Concert Hall from 4 to 6, you get a chance to see an early screening of Shakespeare Uncovered Season 2. It's February 5th on TV, but you get to see it this weekend, January 31st, Saturday at 4. And scenes from you guys' event, too. And a panel discussion about how it came about and such, too. Yeah. So that's so cool. And National Endowment for the Humanities did the grant for this, and we just really want to thank them, too. And I know that Chris from WNET was a huge part of getting this rolling, and he'll be here for this event, too. And he's the guy behind Pioneer House and Frontier Home and all these things. So pretty cool. He'll be here, and I'll be doing an interview with him sometime during next week. So also you have this summer you have what are you doing? You're doing Two Gentlemen of Verona.
Yes, yeah.
Ah, so good.
Directed by Andrew Castle.
Uh-huh. He was here last Friday and we spoke a bit of that. And also Sarah, you're coming back for the Macbeth.
Yes, very excited.
Opera, Metropolitan Opera has part of their season is Macbeth, and that's on Sunday, February 8th, starting at noon. And you and Bruce Rogers and some other folks are going to be in.
My mother, Gianna Drogheo, will be here as well, and she's an opera buff and a lover of Verdi. So we'll be talking about how he adapted Shakespeare. I think it's his first Shakespeare adaptation.
Yeah. It's interesting that these opera composers saw in Shakespeare these very similar themes of opera. You know, it's the
high passions,
love, betrayal, murder, you know, all these things. And they would adapt these into operas, too. It just makes sense.
And it's fun to see the connection between a soliloquy, you know, like Macbeth saying, I see a dagger, or is this the dagger here before me? And seeing that as an aria.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty neat.
And you got to see that because you went to the theater. They've got these live in HD cinema events, and it's come to Fairbanks Regal Cinema Theaters. And I hear that is really cool to see.
Pretty phenomenal. The production values are just amazing. And at first I didn't know what a tape of a live performance, if that would be interesting, but it actually is really engaging to see how they stage it. They took the witches' characters and made it into a whole chorus of women. So that was really fun to see it on that grander scale.
And, you know, with the Metropolitan Opera, they do all the interviews and backstage scenes and such. And so we hear that on the radio. But on the theater part, you get to see all these scene changes and how that all works. And it's truly amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Kat, are we ready to...
Sure.
Talk a little bit about what song you're going to do and how it came about.
So I originally came up to Fairbanks to work with Fairbanks Shakespeare back in 2009. Also,
you
right
came
after
up from
college,
where?
From Milwaukee, Wisconsin,
cool.
My hometown. And Fairbanks Shakespeare frequently incorporates music into the shows, which I think anyone who comes to a play with live music, I think, immediately gets sucked in a way that they might not otherwise. So, in 2009, I got to dance in Othello and play some messengers, and I got to karate chop a guy on stage, which is pretty fun. And I just fell in love with Fairbanks and Alaska and this wonderful group of artists. And
she's still smiling, and it's like 38 below us.
Yeah, you have to be pretty pretty devoted and sold on a group of people to come up from plus 40 to minus 40. So.
I mean, not that Milwaukee doesn't have winter, but... Probably don't have 38 right. below.
There's a line from below. The play that I quoted when we were driving around in 40 below, that though she be but little, she is fierce. I say about Hermia. Kat's actually not that little, but I can take her.
Madeline Fendrick and another wonderful musician from the Midwest and another woman, Katie Delvaux. We collaborated in 2011 to create live music for our 12th night school tour, which was the first school tour that Fairbanks Shakespeare did. That was also funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. And this is a different song that I wrote just on my own about Alaska and the experience of living out in the woods and cooperating with a bunch of people from all over the country who seem to flock here every summer to work on a show. So
you didn't just live out in the woods. You lived at Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater Camp.
Camp, yes. And camp is pretty legendary here in town, I've come to realize. It's where we build scenery and rehearse and live and cook, and we frequently run lines out there when we do have spare time. So, yeah, it's a really wonderful place. And this song is called Corduroy Road, which is a made-up road, but inspired by Fairbanks Shakespeare Camp.
These stubborn blues to their knees. A candle, a match, and a good book to read is all a woman needs of Corduroy Street. 6 little miles outside of Fairbanks town. Exit the highway and take a ride on down. End of the road, kicking up gravel and dust. That is where you can find me through the end of August. Corduroy Road, how you call to me. How you sweet talk and boast of your skies endlessly. A fire, a sweet song, and a warm place to sleep is all a woman needs up Corduroy Street. Wake up in the night, hold yourself very still. You might hear the dogs howl and you might hear the owl shrill. You might dream of a lover who comes back to fill the quiet and the time up Corduroy Hill. Corduroy Road, how you call to me. How you sweet talk and coax these stubborn blues to their knees. A candle, a match, and a good book to read is all a woman needs up Corduroy Street. All a woman needs up Corduroy Street.
Oh, bravo, Kat.
Thank you.
Kat Woodkey playing a song inspired by living out at Shakespeare Camp in August. That's really nice.
If you pay close attention to the lyrics, you'll notice I tend to leave by the end of August. But I always seem to come back.
I think there's a lot of singer-songwriters that have written about that very thing. She either leaves or they're leaving or, you know, it's a seasonal thing for some. That was beautiful. Thanks for sharing that for Alaska Live, folks. And you play Hermia in the...
Hermia, and there's actually some doubling in the show, so uh-huh. I'm also playing Starveling, the tailor, and a fairy as well.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's actually 10 people, 10 actresses all in the show, and they all dub almost all double roles.
Well, you are traveling around mm-hmm. to some far-flung places,
yes.
and you're performing during the day on weekdays because you're doing school shows. And so it could be tough to get more than 10 people together.
It's tough to get 10.
Yes. Tom, I believe that. I believe that. It might have been even tough to get you here all the way from Juneau, but it's wonderful that you came back up to your old stomping grounds of Fairbanks. To
oh, yeah, I love it here.
Direct. Yeah. Yeah. Alan, did you have a song from the youth sing in Gwich'in in this?
Yeah, I have two songs here. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. I mean, earlier, is your voice up to it?
I hope so.
Good.
Well, earlier we were talking about the connections and, you know, Shakespeare in England and us Gwich'in people here in Alaska. And it seems like such a distance, but then there's closer connections than we think. And when we were working on putting Lear together, I said, hey, you know, we have this song in our hymnal, which is from the 1860s, and Gwich'in people here in Alaska and Canada were missionaries were Anglican, Church of England. And so one of the songs they sang or taught us and translated into our language, I think you'll recognize it. I'll just sing the first verse anyway. The de gui chang chu cho, di ke qua the cho chit, ni zhu gong tai. Duck de de cha cha e, guin zhi ya ko ching chi, ni zhu di ke go the.
And that song started Lear off, actually. All the characters came out while that was being played.
Ah. Yeah, it's the British National Anthem. It's the same tune as My Country, Tis of Thee, but this is God Save the King. There it was,
yeah,
all
right.
These years translated in Gwich'in. And that might have been, you know, doing Lear Hechkwai was probably the first time that it was like relevantly sung. Especially here, you know, here in America, we're after the British Revolution or American Revolution, we don't sing that song so much. But
so you grew up singing that song in Gwich'in.
Yeah. There's about 170 songs, hymns that were translated mm-hmm. into Gwich'in language, as well as the Old and New Testament, the Book of Common Prayer. All of these materials had been translated into Gwich'in language.
Do you remember the first time you heard that in English?
Well, these translated hymns and so on, because we're so isolated among Gwich'in people, sometimes the rest of the world continued on and forgot these songs that they used to sing in their services, but they were still sung in these little Gwich'in communities of Alaska and Canada. And, so it's interesting when you look at that history and the connections, and that was one of the great discoveries we made in the process of preparing Lear. And The Fool also had some songs in Lear. Mm. And in Midsummer Nights, there's a song that Bottom sings when he's first transformed. He's got this giant head on, animal head on.
Oh, right. He's got a moose head on in this case. Yeah.
And he's singing and Titania awakes and immediately falls in love with this kind of monster. But he's singing this song, and we translated it to Gwich'in. The English goes, the finch, the sparrow, and the lark, the great cuckoo with his simple song that may many men hear, but they don't dare say no to it. We just made it, you know, we don't have cuckoos here in Alaska and maybe
that.
Larks. And so we put it like raven and robin, and there's a little bird we call Nick Ick, which when it sings, it goes, ah, tricking hee.
Oh, it's a chickadee, possibly.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
But the song, it's pretty simple. It just goes, Dicha vit e jaiha, vihti tsik cho kachan, shu vide ju zu, nek e quinzi chitli. Hyatso tago vize, chitzel tilik zu ha, dingi kokosh ki genjit, du ye aqua varahan je. To which Tanya awakens and she says, Gee, cut which in she dick it when she deal seats and Jinisha that Juinja. What angel is this who's waking me up from my bed of flowers? And then it goes from there, and yeah, it's quite comical.
Well, birds sing oftentimes, you know, the male will sing, so the female will, find him attractive, and so there you are seeing this bird song.
And I think it's going to be a big part of our sound design. And we're working with James Bartlett, who's just a wonderful musician and all-around sound guy. And here in Alaska, you know, when the summer comes and there's birds everywhere suddenly, and they all have their different songs, and it's just a sure sign of summer.
And there's no better place to be in the summertime than Fairbanks and around Fairbanks. The interior is something else. Yeah, I really,
is. Yeah, James Bartlett, he was the one that mastered the last couple Alaska Live volume 6 and 7 discs for us here at KUAC. And yeah, he's really good at what he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a great team of people behind the scenes as well. You know, James doing the sound, and Chris George, who's very technical savvy, and he's helping with the visuals. And Kelly Rick is helping with the fairy costumes, King Oberon and Queen Titania, and she's just coming up with some wonderful ideas for Alaskanizing these characters.
And yeah,
I think this is a great team of people.
And this is something that is done with Shakespeare plays a lot. They're adapted to either a different time period or a different place, or in this case, it's been very adapted for even language.
Yeah, and they're constantly adapting Shakespeare into different times and different places and on the moon, wherever. But what's great about...
Has there been one on the moon?
Yeah, I think there has.
Of course.
What I really appreciate about doing Shakespeare and being able to have someone like Alan here is that we can make it very local and make very, very important as well and very relevant to the people that live here. And we can get it as specific as we can break it down to a specific people who live here as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the best thing that happens with this project. And especially for going, you know, we go to schools, but most of the schools we go to are villages. So to have a kid in middle school see this and see someone like Alan and Aaron Tripp and others that are in the show perform and speak a native language makes it very tangible and very possible. And I think that's the goal anyhow, is that we're not going to, people aren't going to start walking down the street and speaking Gwich'in but they can see that it's possible, and especially for the kids, if they see it's possible. And with a play like Midsummer Night's Dream, if they see that it's fun, that it could help out in some ways. If
that song that Alan just sang is pretty catchy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's a pretty catchy tune.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I don't know if we covered this, but the way Alan and Marilyn translate, they don't just translate Shakespeare into Gwich'in. They have to translate Shakespeare into very plain English, then take that and translate the English into Gwich'in. So it's really, there's a two-part process to it.
Yeah, and we think of what it would make most sense to Gwich'in speakers, this idea from Shakespeare. How would that be expressed in Gwich'in, and how would the idea come across? Sometimes it kind of gets turned on its head. Even the subtitle we came up with for Midsummer Night's Dream, we don't really have a word for midnight sun or largely like the seasons in which in language you would, it refers to the natural world and the animals and the changes that are happening. This bird arrives and they lay their eggs, and then this is when they test their wings, and you know, and then the fish come up the river. So that's how we identify summer or fall, or the moose are mating in the fall time, or they're battling. And so, like for Midsummer Night's Dream, I spoke with Lillian Garnett, and she says, oh, okay. You know, she had to think about it for a second, and she said, well, Shin Jukne Genelia. So Shin is summer, and then Jukne is kind of the height of summer, and Genelia is the just dreaming. And there's an image we're using also, I think, for our poster, and it's a mountain in Arctic Village. It's Nitsida, and it's kind of a twin peak type of mountain. And in the solstice time in the summer, the midnight sun just kind of passes between the two peaks and shines out towards the village. And that's how, and my grandmother beaded this mountain. Oh. And she was a wonderful bead worker and sewer. And you can tell just by looking at her beadwork what time of year it is, because that sun is only at that position at that time of year. In the summer, it's in the winter, it's not, you wouldn't see that sun positioned there. But so I think it's, yeah, just been a wonderful experience getting this all together.
And if you want to see some of this, not staged at our panel discussion event, but you will be performing some scenes.
And yeah, I think we're going to be.
Will you have some costumes?
Probably not. It's so
not
early
yet.
In the process.
It's too early, right.
And we'll probably still have scripts in their hands, too, because
we're
just, it's been 3 days, I think, we've had rehearsals. And I just got to town, but yeah, there'll be readings and some Gwich'in and some discussion, and yeah. And
that's on Saturday with our public event that we're doing together, partnering for Shakespeare Uncovered, the premiere of season two. We'll all watch The Midsummer Night's Dream with Hugh Bonneville. You may know him from, he's Lord Grantham from Downton Abbey. And then folks from Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, including Tom and Alan and Sarah and Kat, will be there to perform some scenes, and maybe you'll sing your song again, which is really wonderful, Alan. Mm-hmm. And that's at 4 o'clock at Davis Concert Hall. And we encourage everyone to come out to that event. It's free and open to the public. Well, what did we forget to talk about, or what did we forget to say about this production, or about the excitement surrounding all these different things that are going on, Sarah?
Well, I think we could talk about the Bardathon a little more.
Let's do.
Just in case some folks out there aren't familiar with it. I'm just going to go on record and say it's one of my favorite things ever. Tom mentioned the year 2000 was the first summer he came up here. I think that was also our first Bardathon, and I was a senior in high school, and I would show up to a midnight reading of The Tempest, and we'd all make the storm together in the room, and some of the people that were in that room are still my very good friends. So that it's just a very fun event where you can hear the language spoken aloud, which is how it's meant to be heard. And it's just really accessible. Anybody can read any part, and you can get to know some pretty obscure Shakespeare plays or hear your faves. So the way it works is you can show up anytime, and every 4 hours we start a different play. They're at 12 p.m., 4 p.m., 8 p.m., midnight, and on from there.
4 a.m.
Yep. And the 4 a.m. ones are pretty interesting, and we need your help.
Yeah. I think we may have shown up for a midnight one. It was not a 4 a.m. one, but it was so fun. The middle of winter, really cold outside, and you just forgot all about that. And mm-hmm. It was all about being immersed in this Shakespeare reading. And I think we were reading during Henry IV or something, which to me did not sound exciting at first.
Well, it's a good one.
But it's a good one because we were there with such great, we were there with some of the FST actors and the facilitator. Yeah, it was just great.
And if you want to see Bruce Rogers in his prime, That is when you go see that guy.
We got to read with Bruce Rogers,
yep, nothing like
the founder of FST.
Nothing like walking into the room and seeing Bruce leaning on one hand, reading to himself over a speakerphone. It's a sight to see. But he's got, he gets everybody really riled up and into it, and he's very passionate about it, and he's been doing it since its inception. And he's the artistic director for the theater, and has been for, I guess, it's 20 years now.
And that starts, Bardathon starts on Valentine's Day. And it starts off with Romeo and
bring
Juliet,
a date.
Right? Yeah, bring a date.
If you're looking for a way to make things interesting, you can
romantic.
Bring her to Romeo and Juliet or him.
Yeah.
Maybe not the first date.
Right, yeah.
If you're looking to make things awkward.
I didn't know I was going to be here for 4 hours.
Well, it's been really great to have you guys here. This hour has gone by so quickly. It's just amazing how that happens, where all of a sudden we're at 11 o'clock and you guys probably have readings and lines to do tomorrow already.
That's right. Yeah. have translations and we have teachings and we have rehearsal at night. Yeah.
Alan, you have lots of Gwich'in to teach your other actors. And
yeah.
That must be an amazing experience for you to make this language come alive to others.
Yeah, it's great hearing Jake and Delinda and Aaron will be speaking Gwich'in. And
Brian as well.
Brian. And we do hope that we will be able to incorporate at least Yupik and Tlingit in some capacity with this production. And maybe one dream down the line that we're striving towards is Gwich'in and Inupiaq, Romeo and Juliet.
Oh. We'll be looking for that.
Yeah, that might be in a couple of years.
That's okay.
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah. It's okay. Tom Rolnot, director of Midsummer Night's Dream for FST. It's been wonderful having you back in Fairbanks. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Alan Hayton, thanks so much for coming in and making this real for us and explaining about how the Gwich'in translation came about. It's been really great.
Merci, ciao.
Sarah Mitchell, great to have you here, and good luck with tour managing and playing Helena.
Good
It'll
luck.
It'll be a romp through the forest. I'm excited. Thank you, Lori.
And Kat Woodkey, thanks so much for coming up to Fairbanks and being a part of FST again and sharing your music here on Alaska Live.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful.
For Alaska Live, I'm your host. I'm Lori Neufeld, and we want to thank one more time the National Endowment for the Humanities and Shakespeare Uncovered for the grant that made this partnership possible. And we invite you all to the public early screening of Shakespeare Uncovered. That's on this Saturday at 4 o'clock at the UAF Davis Concert Hall. And Shakespeare Uncovered Season 2 airs on Thursday nights on KUAC-TV at 9 o'clock, starting February 5th. For Alaska Live, I'm Lori Neufeld here on KUAC.